完璧などありえない。この世界は不完全だから、美しい。
バカバカバカ、
なに
俺は海賊王になる。
待って、なんて美味しさなの。
力を渡した時に言ったことを覚えているかい。クエ、違う、そこじゃない。
変態遅い。
Hello and welcome to More Than Hentai, a podcast that is here to show you that anime is just far more than tentacles and cat girls. There's also countless stories of love, loss, laughs, hope, horror, and happiness that are just dying to be found. And I, Brendan White, the Salt and Pepper Senpai, am here to help you find them. More Than Hentai is proudly powered by our friends over at Audio Technica and Dash Water. So please go upgrade your audio and hydration games today, preferably after you listen to this episode. And joining me in the Sugoi studio is my second international guest on the podcast. She's a freelance writer and podcast with over a decade worth of experience in the industry and has created countless pieces of amazing content covering the worlds of video games, pop culture, horror, fantasy, and roleplay. We share common loves for happy endings and cereal water, and also both very capable when it comes to the art of being tattooed. You can find her on the socials at Andraste, which is A-N-D-R-A-S-T-E. Kayleigh Lawrence, you bloody legend. Welcome to the studio. How might you be doing?
I am doing fantastic. Wow. Thank you. That was a cool introduction.
Hey, you did all of that. I just found the historical data and put it into words, and here we are. So, no, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to come on
and
talk anime with me. And yeah, I mentioned a few things in that intro about yourself, so maybe we can start right there and get the Kayleigh story, because you're a woman with many accomplishments. You've done many a thing, and I want to hear all about them. So yeah, let's talk.
Okay, gosh, oh boy, I guess. I think probably the best place to start would be Geek Bomb, mm-hmm. which is where I kind of got my start in the industry. So I worked for Geek Bomb for a few years. I was a writer, content creator, I guess. We also did lots of social media stuff, and primarily I did top 10 lists, gaming, podcast related stuff, but also a lot of Buffy content. Mm-hmm. Buffy mm-hmm. and Fallout are the two most important things in the world to me. Don't tell anyone I said that.
Two fantastic things. Obviously, we would like to disconnect the whole Joss Whedon attachment to Buffy.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar created Buffy.
Yeah, I respect that. I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, so I believe that 1 million, trillion, billion percent.
But that's how I make special. It work in my brain.
I love that. I'm all for that. So let's just erase Joss Whedon from the annals of history, because even though he made good stuff, he is a piece of shit. But anyway, Buffy and Fallout, two fantastic tentpole pieces of IP within the pop culture universe.
Agreed.
So I respect the taste and you know, the fandom that you're already throwing out there, because they are two of the goats for different reasons.
Yeah, those are the big ones. I guess my big three would be, we throw horror in there. Mm-hmm, kind of forgot about that. That's a new one.
Yeah, and I Must Scream, obviously the horror podcast for wimps, which I love the little byline. I think that's fantastic, because
it's,
I probably fit that mold. I love horror, but yeah, sometimes it does scare me or make me uncomfortable or a little unsettled, but I persist because I can't let this fictitious creature or monster beat me. I have to get through end, even if it makes my heart elevate to unsafe levels.
Yeah, no, that was the whole point of starting it, actually, was that I am a wimp. I get scared. I don't like to watch horror in the dark. So yeah, the whole point of the podcast is just to you know, kind of set people up going into a movie, knowing what they may or may not see, what might scare them, what might trigger them, what might shock them, just that people are going in, you know, spoiler free. But yeah, I'm actually about to relaunch the podcast.
I was just about to ask that very question. When is it coming back?
Because so it is a little ways down the line. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, I'm going to start it October, because that's the spooky season.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, over on my TikTok, I'm going to be doing 100 days of horror leading up to the relaunch of the podcast. So every day on my TikTok, I'll post a new little tidbit about horror, just, you know, some behind the scenes stuff or just anything relating to the horror world in general.
I'm excited to follow along with that, because I reckon I could be not only entertained but also informed, because there's just so much content out there. It's hard to stay on top of everything.
Oh,
have
truly.
You got like a... I don't want to say like a Mount Rushmore, but what are a couple of your favorite horror pieces of cinema or TV however you want to describe it? What's a couple of your faves?
So I say I have three all-time favorites, and they kind of rotate which one is in first, second, and third. Mm-hmm. But The Thing usually lands right at the top because it is perfect. Then I'd say the original Scream, the first one. And then the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that is one of the most beautiful horror movies in the world. Daniel Pearl is a phenomenal cinematographer, and he absolutely killed it, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, no, that's the perfect word to describe everything that's going on screen, two characters, and just for the viewers as well. But I love those three, especially like The Thing is one of my favorites, irrespective of horror, just as favorite pieces of cinema of all time. Like, it is gorgeous. The sci-fi horror, the practical effects, the cast, the pacing.
Is phenomenal. Oh, smart characters.
Yeah.
A rarity in horror.
Yeah, it's certainly, yeah, not the norm by any stretch of the imagination, but it is so good. I watched it at far too young an age, but like, I was all for it. Give me all the body horror and all the creepy-ass practical effects. Yeah. Like the prequel with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it was fine.
It was fine.
Except they butchered most of the prac they did and then redid it with CGI, which upsets me.
But that's the biggest complaint I have about it. The CGI is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah,
terrible.
But yeah, The Thing is phenomenal cinema.
Yeah,
and I can get on board with the original Scream. The latter stuff, like, it's just getting too meta for me. It's really lost its way for me.
Yeah, they have not been good, I'd say, since 3. but that doesn't mean that I didn't like everything that came after 3. Even 3 is not that good. with the Jay and Silent Bob cameo. I, as a little stoner, I have to, you know, admit that I love that, as shameful as that is. But generally, that it's not the best. As the series goes on, there's a bit of a decline. But
yeah,
Sydney is hands down the best final girl ever of all time.
Yeah,
it's fair. That is a hill I will die on.
That's a worthy hill, and I think many will die on that hill with you. And something that sadly did die on a hill, and it was cut far too soon. I mentioned it in the intro as well. You also were a big fan of Happy Endings, which is one of my favorite sitcom-based pieces of media from the last several decades. Like, it was our generation's Friends is what I was calling 100%. It. And it got chopped after a few seasons, very unnecessarily, and it still breaks my heart every time I think about it.
It's easily my favorite sitcom of all time. It is so good. The cast are phenomenal. They work so well together. They're so funny. I love that they still hang out. Like, they still get in touch with each other, and just proves that it wasn't just, you know, a flash in the pan thing. Like, this was legitimately just like a good group of people.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I'd still like to open up a food truck called Steak Me Home Tonight. I think it is just the best. But yeah, it was gone far too soon.
Well, so, far too soon. R.I.P.
Very delicate topic, but yeah, well worth your time, anyone that hasn't watched it, because I guess not enough people watch it. And that's why I got truly. The ask.
Watch it now.
Yeah, watch it after you listen to this, or watch this however you're consuming this podcast. But let's sort of shift gears a little bit, because obviously this is an anime-based podcast. Yes. So let's talk your origin stories. Let's talk your history with this fantastic world of anime. So where did it all begin with you, first and foremost?
Like most women born in the late 80s, my anime journey started with Sailor Moon.
I respect that.
Yeah. So I obviously had the, you know, the English dubbed version, the it's not as good going back and watching it now as an adult, being like, oh, I kind of prefer the original. Mm-hmm. But I super, super involved with Sailor Moon, loved Sailor Moon. Then anime kind of just disappeared off of my radar until I was like 30.
Okay, so it was out in the
which
wilderness
was about
for a while.
6 years ago.
You were too focused on Robert Carpenter and people like that. So
exactly,
I get it.
So yeah, then I think it was Demon Slayer was the one that pulled me back in. Very specifically, sorry, spoiler for people, but when Nezuko kicks the graveyard ghost's head off, I think it's in the second episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was in. I was like full. Could not stop watching. That was the moment I fell in love, and yeah, then from there it's just been building. I just keep trying to hit all the like bigger, like, you know, a little bit of Attack on Titan. I'm dabbling in One Piece. But that's, you know.
Yeah, can I? it's a divisive topic because there is devout One Piece fans that are just blind to the imperfections. And then there's, like, I like to call them realist fans like myself where, you know, it's fine, but it ain't the goat like people make it out to be. How far are you in, I guess, first and foremost? Because we've got 1,106 episodes, I think, as of last week. So
I think I'm only like 200 episodes in.
Okay.
So I'm still very new. It's still very fresh for me. Listen, my cat's name is Luffy. So
that's his enough, right?
I think I understand what people, you know, how people feel about it. And it's, you know, there's definitely flaws. It is not perfect. It is not like the be all and end all of animes, but it is very fun. I just really love the, you know, a found family story is my favorite kind of story.
It is endearing at its core and relatable in weird ways when you say that about people with superpowers that are pirates and all that kind of stuff. But you can sort of put yourself into some of these characters' shoes. And
oh, absolutely.
It is enjoyable. It's just, I'm very big on don't waste my time. And
yeah, there's a lot of time wasting.
Triple or now quadruple numbered anime that are just running forever, there is going to be some time wasting. Like when you've got 1,100 odd episodes, clearly there's going to be some bloat. And I can dismiss it sometimes, but no, that Skypiea arc, which you would have just pushed through as well, that was the jump off point for me where I'm like, nah, to hell with this nonsense. I am out. I'll come back another time or maybe wait for the remake that's happening. Maybe that'll get me this time. But no, it did a dash for me right there.
Yeah. I think if I'm being totally realistic, I think I'm probably only as far as Skypiea because of Skypiea. It's a little slow. It's super fun. But it's definitely bloat. It's definitely filler. You definitely don't need to watch it. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going through it, I think some people, like if you're going to watch it, you have to watch every single episode. No, you don't. You definitely don't. Don't do that to yourself.
I did that to myself and that's probably half the reason I'm out. Cause I know there is like One Pace and some good guides where it can cut a lot of that fat and just give you a bit more of a streamlined viewing experience. But I'm like, no, I'm going with what Oda envisioned from episode one all the way through to now. And I wish I didn't do that, but I'm too far into to pull the parachute. I will jump back in again eventually, but now there's just too many other good things.
I like was Demon gonna say, Slayer. So much good stuff on right now.
Man, are you fully up to date with Demon Slayer? You're sort of in the Hashira arc now and seeing all that training play out. Oh my God. It is not only one of the best anime, in my opinion, ever made, but it's also one of the most beautiful anime ever made.
Absolutely. It is hands down. I think it's the most beautiful anime I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It is stunning.
Ufa Table, I don't know how they do it. Like, obviously, they're mixing traditional animation styles with digital, but they blend it in a way where it's not jarring and it's just this art.
Exactly,
Oh, my God.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Give me all of those breathing techniques just over and over. Yeah. Please and thank you. And Attack on Titan, you mentioned. Anything else? Like, now you sort of mentioned you sort of parked anime for a while. You then re-entered the arena in your 30s again. Is there anything else you've watched over the last few years that you wanted to mention as far as something that stands out more than others? Could be ongoing, could be finished.
I haven't finished it yet, but I've recently picked up Princess Jellyfish.
Ooh, okay.
It is so stinking cute. I didn't know what to expect. I just saw a TikTok of a girl saying, not enough people are watching Princess Jellyfish. It's so good. So I literally that day I went and started watching it and it's adorable. I watched like 8 episodes in a row immediately. It's super cute. It's it basically, to oversimplify it, it's basically just a bunch of autistic women in a house together. And it's very relatable to me in that aspect.
It is an easy watch. I stumbled on it, I think maybe similarly, like someone threw something out on the socials and I'm always just combing for things to watch. And I'm like, okay, I'll dial this up. But somehow slipped through my net and I checked it out. And I'm like, you know what? I enjoyed this. This was real. It was wholesome at times. It was cute as hell. Mm-hmm. And that's usually a good formula for me. Like if there's anything that's going to warm my heart from a viewer's perspective, I'm usually all in, no matter how cheesy, campy, corny, crappy it is.
Oh, if there's some
heart warmth there. Yeah.
Give me those cliches. Give me those tropes.
Yeah.
I want the feel good.
The more tropes, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm excited to have you on because the anime we're going to be talking about here, and for listeners, if this is your first time stopping on by More Than Hentai, first and foremost, why did it take you so long? But secondly, the way this anime, this podcast works is we do singular deep dives on a unique anime each and every episode. So we're going to do a deep dive on the very first episode of the anime in question. It's going to be full spoiler front to back. So we will be going through all the major plot points of episode one. We will not be spoiling anything beyond that. We will not be ruining twists and turns and big reveals or things that happen down the line or in subsequent seasons or films. So it's just going to be a full deep dive on the first episode of the anime. We'll talk the good, the bad, and everything else in between. See if it was a worthy recommendation. So we'll see if we landed or we, you know, missed the landing here as far as is this a thumbs up or a thumbs down experience. And our title in focus for this episode of More Than Hentai is a shonen action comedy known as Spy Family, which is an award-winning manga series written and illustrated by Tatsuya Endo. It originally debuted in 2019 and currently has over 35 million copies in circulation, making it one of the best-selling manga series of all time. An anime television series adaptation produced by Wit Studio and Cloverworks was premiered in April of 2022. We have two seasons and 37 episodes currently available at time of recording. We are recording on the 31st of May 2024, but the Forgers have also appeared in various light novels, one film, Total Code White, a musical, and their own video game. Spy Family can be found in the majority of countries on Crunchyroll and Netflix and currently holds a score of 8.52 on My Anime List, and that is based off 962,000 unique user reviews, and it is currently the 70th most popular anime overall on the website. And the story of Spy Family is as follows. In the tense environment between the neighboring countries Ostania and Westarlis, renowned spy Twilight undertakes dangerous missions to prevent war. Disguised as psychiatrist Lloyd Forger in Berlin, Ostania, he aims to gather intelligence on politician Donovan Desmond, who's connected to Eden Academy. To achieve this, Lloyd creates a fake family with city clerk Yor Breyer as his wife and adopts orphan Anya as his daughter. Yor, an undercover assassin known as Thorn Princess, and Anya, a mind-reading esper, also keep their secrets hidden. Despite the deception, the Forger family slowly discovers genuine love and understanding among themselves. So, Kayleigh, we're going to be deep diving on episode one, known as Operation Strix. But let's go high level to begin with. Let's talk about your overall general impressions on the episode. The floor is yours.
So, immediately, I love it. going into it knowing vaguely what it was about, I kind of already knew I was gonna like it. Like I said before, tropes. I love tropes, and this one has got plenty of them. And they was hitting all the right notes for me. Visually beautiful, music's great. Mm-hmm. Just generally loved it.
I think you took almost my exact words there. Beat by beat, I wrote for my general impression here, gorgeously animated with a great soundtrack and a quirky cast of characters. It manages to tread the line between fun, silly, dark, and realistic very well, very tropey, very bloody good is what I wrote. And episode one, Operation Strix. It is a hell of a time. We get a cold open straight off the rip, so we don't get to see the fantastic opening theme play out, which is a song titled Mixed Nuts. It's well worth the time, and you would have heard it in episode two anyway. It's a good little bop. Like the music accompaniment to Spy Family really complements what's going on the screen very well. It's funny. It rises when it needs to, and it sort of is subdued in the background for the most part. Yep. In those key moments, it really picks up. But we get, with this cold open, and we're seeing a lot of, government-based suits and spooks talking about the death of an Estonian diplomat. He's been, blown up in his car on the way to an event. And we find out that there is this this constant rivalry between Westarlis and Estonia. And the best way to compare this is, picture the Cold War, and we've got East and West Germany here at loggerheads now. Yeah. So that's the sort of the setting that they've given to us here in these openings. We also then are introduced to Twilight, who we find out is pretty much like the best agent in the Estonian roster. He's a spy of the highest caliber. He's the master of disguise and the man of 100 faces. And you're like, okay, this is a guy that I can get behind. Like this Twilight, he seems like a dude You can already see his espionage-based tactics here, where he's doing a swerve over some photos that we find out are about an Estonian diplomat that has a toupee. And because he's lying about his hair, he's clearly lying in the government, can't be trusted. Like, it's just a nothing piece, but it really cracked me up. And just the amount of different tone going on in these opening scenes just really got me good on this rewatch again before we jumped on today.
Yeah, it's an absolute delight. The whole bit with the toupee, that immediately got me going. It's just great.
It was just so out of left field for me, where I'm like, oh, okay, this is, you know, this is some cloak and dagger stuff. Mm-hmm. I immediately sort of started thinking when it went into that little bit of silliness, I thought of like Get Smart, like Maxwell Sheffield type of vibes. Yeah. So you got a little bit of that sprinkled in with some just some proper espionage that we're seeing run rampant through cinema again these days. People are horny for sort of period piece spy drama at the moment.
Oh, yeah. A little bit of cloak and dagger, baby.
Yeah. Give me all the cloaks and all the daggers, preferably not in the back, though. But so it really sets the scene early here. We find out that, Twilight's, you know, he's known not only amongst his peers, but I guess across the globe as far as the spy of all spies. He's got this prestige attached to himself. If you need something done that's delicate, he's your man. He's the person to call, and he will happen to get it done almost effortlessly as well. Like it seems like he just, is in rare air.
Yeah.
So we find out that, he's a bit of a badass, bit of a cool dude at the same time. And after this fake exchange happens there where he double crosses this gangster named Edgar, we then jump forward to another scene and we're in this nice fancy restaurant and we find out that Twilight is known as Robert at this point in time, and he's sitting down having dinner with Karen, who's complaining and carrying on about a few things, and he just breaks up with her then and there, and he's like, yep, sorry.
That was cold as hell.
Yeah, and he's ruthless. Like throughout this first episode, some of the things he says and thinks, you just go, holy shit, dude. Like, ouch.
Deadass tells Karen she is not very intelligent, and that's why he's dumping her.
Yeah, he does not pull any punches. So, he breaks up with Karen because, he calls her, stupid for lack of a better term. And we find out later that Karen, or in this moment as well, that Karen was the daughter of Edgar, the guy he just double-crossed. You can already see, he's playing this role to get the information he needed to be able to pull off this crisscross that he had there with Edgar. So that breakup happens. And then we also have this little moment straight after that where he's like, you know what? Dreams of marriage and a normal, happy life, I threw them away when I became a spy, along with my true identity. And you're like, oh, like I'm in, but I'm also like, my heart's already bleeding for this man in this moment. Yeah. Within the first like 2-3 minutes, I'm like, I love this guy. I want to cuddle you, Twilight.
Yeah.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, this is a guy that definitely needs some affection in his life. He's been a cold, hardened spy for too long.
Yeah, so there is, some pretty heavy emphasis here as far as, he's, a man that lives on his own, does his own thing. All he wants to do is save the world, make the world a better place. Doesn't really care who he has to hurt or step on to make that dream become a reality there. So after that, very, very upsetting line about happy life, normal happy life pretty much being non-existent for Twilight. We jump forward to the next day. And he's sits down on a park bench, and we see this cheeky like newspaper exchange between him and another nameless gentleman, and we
classic
find out
spy move.
Yeah, nice little misdirect, and they do the paper switch, and then we find out that within the newspaper that he's now picked up, there's hidden messages and code hidden in the newspaper itself. But I wanted to ask, like, as a cat mom, did the random meow from the guy get you? Because I'm just like, what?
I was like, what is this? I thought it was gonna be like a regular integrated thing where it was like a spy code. The guy just said meow.
Yeah, it was just a one and done. Like maybe that was like the secret passcode or acknowledgement for this meeting.
Maybe.
But yeah, just a random throwaway meow here from this old spy gentleman. So I'm just like, okay. Like I was laughing, but I was waiting for the payoff, and I'm like, no, that was just there.
That's it. That's all it is. Sometimes a meow is just a meow.
That's it. But the world needs more meows, right? So,
very true.
You know, shout out to Witch Studio for throwing it out there and making us more aware of our lack of meows in our life. So, so that part did make me cackle again when I watched it like in the last 24 hours. And in this moment as well, as he's sort of reading through the newspaper, deciphering the code in real time to work out what his next mission is, the use of music in this scene is really great. The score is really starting to build, and it's got like that nice classical jazzy funk sort of vibe to it. Like it's a real toe tapper sort of head bopper, and I'm like, yeah, I'm living for this.
It's giving Ocean's 11.
Yes. Did it get your toes tapping?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very distinctive soundtrack in anime. Like, I don't know if it's just recency bias or not, but I don't know many other anime that sort of play in this realm. And I guess it is a bit more of a period piece type of anime as well, where we're not seeing a lot of modern day musical instruments getting thrown around. So it makes it stand out a little bit more, but it just blends into this world here so well.
Yeah.
And perfect. Like Estonia with that music playing in the background, I want to live in Estonia. Yeah. Like the architecture's great, the fashion, the food looks delicious, and the tunes, like it's a world I want to be part of. Yeah. I don't know if that's a smart thing to say or not, because I think the Cold War was a shit time, but yeah. So we find out that as he's deciphering this code, the next mission that he's going to be thrust into is known as Operation Strix. And yeah, it ties into this man, Donovan Desmond, who is the head of the National Unity Party. And he's also a grave threat to the truce between the East and the West. So you're like, okay, the stakes are getting set nice and early. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be a plot that plays out over one episode, multiple episodes, multiple seasons? Who knows? But I'm like, okay, they've set the stakes. We know that this guy is a bit of a bad dude. We know that Twilight's goal is for world peace, and this Desmond seems to be a bit of a linchpin in prohibiting that from happening.
Yes.
How's it all going to play out? But I like just this way of giving us the bigger picture stuff really simply through just announcing it through this mission. Like, I'm like, this is good storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you don't need the huge exposition. You don't need the blackboard and all the notes and everything. It's just nice and easy. Give the notes and you get a clear idea of how the overall, that's what I'm looking for.
The overall, the overall stakes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just, you kind of get the sense that, this is his life and this is all his life is.
In that moment, like you said, it's nice and easy, no exposition there, but the easiness, I think, goes away very quickly in the next moment, because as he's reading through the Operation Strix file notes, there's just a part casually thrown in from the headquarters where it's like, oh, and by the way, you also need to marry and have a family to earn Desmond's trust. And record scratch moment, but replaced in this moment with the old fabled coffee/drink spit.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love. I love that in any form of media. Cracked me up.
Oh, yeah.
And, it circled immediately back to the part before where he said, dreams of marriage and a normal happy life doesn't really exist. And it's like, joke's on you, Twilight.
Yeah.
It's happening today.
Oh, yeah. I also love the idea that this very cool, calm, collected spy has this ridiculous outburst on a public train.
And then the outburst escalates even more because he's like, I'm supposed to have a kid in 7 days. And like that one got me cackling as well. Yeah. Like
that was so good.
The vocal delivery as well. I don't know. Like it's available in sub and dub. I don't know which way you went. No judgment either way.
I did both.
Oh, okay. Which did you prefer?
So normally I prefer sub.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I find it's a little more, I don't know, sound like a pretentious asshole, a little more authentic. obviously you can't always do sub. Sometimes you're very distracted. So it totally does depend. I did find I really liked the sub version of this. I think the voice acting is phenomenal. And both, it's great on both, but yeah, it's definitely a standout.
Yeah. Like a lot of the time when we see that English translation delivered vocally, sometimes it can be weak and pale in comparison to the original Japanese dialogue that's getting thrown out there. But no, they really do well. Like you can see, like the marketing machine behind Spy Family, they are throwing big money at this. And they've got big voice talent, big marketing budget, big animation budget. Like it is impressive in every sense of the word. But yeah, if you wanted to go English or Japanese, you're not going to be feel bad for or regret that decision either way. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah,
kid in 7 days. What? We're getting a little bit more context here, where we've got some narration happening from the higher ups within the government, And it's relaying in this moment as well about Twilight's focus on world peace and saving the world. But there's a line here that really stood out to me where it's like, you know, you're forever saving the world in silence, no medals or fanfare. So he is just a forgotten man that keeps the world safe, and he gets no love, attention, no accolade, adoration nothing. For it. Like, what a shitty way to live.
Yeah, very isolated way to live.
Yeah. I need that cookie. I need that head pat. Like, give me those things once in a while. Please,
100% same.
So, yeah, Twilight just needs a cookie or a head pat in this moment, I feel. But we then jump forward to the next day, and being the consummate professional that he already is, he's now become someone known as Lloyd Forger. And he's a psychiatrist.
Fucking wild name.
It's great. And even the way Lloyd's written, L-O-I-D, like, that throws me every time I read it. I'm like, did a child not know? Like, did you ask a child to write the word Lloyd down as the name, and that's what we got? So, yeah, Lloyd Forger, we find out, you know, his identity in this mission. He's a psychiatrist, and there's this really funny scene here where we're introduced to Lloyd, and he's now house hunting, but also like wiretap hunting, vulnerability hunting, working out if there's safe entry and exit points in case baddies come in to try and kill them, while the realtor's just in the background talking about the place. Like, it is such a fantastic, funny, contrasting moment.
Oh, and I love it.
It really just builds out that world again even more as far as just creating those expectations as far as these worlds colliding throughout the 37 episodes we got so far.
Also very relatable, because I too check for all the exits as soon as I enter a room.
It's a safe and smart way to live. Like, it's not a silly thing to do. So whether you're a spy or just a regular person, I think
just
it's
a neurodivergent freak.
That too. Whatever you are, whoever you are, always be able to like know where your exit is, you know, because who knows what the hell's going to happen or who's going to come through that door. Yeah, safety first, always. So I respect Lloyd in that moment, safety checking this place. And he just snap decision, yeah, we'll take it. This place is perfect. Signs on the line. And there's a funny moment here where the realtor's like, oh, you know, what, like, is your child, is it a son or a daughter? And he's like, oh, I'll find out soon. And he's like,
I guess I'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah, what? And so we jump forward again in time. Lloyd has now headed to the local orphanage to pick out his child to assume in the Operation Strix scenario. We find out pretty quickly the orphanage he went to is a rundown piece of crap place with a worse piece of crap human running the joint. He's a real turd. I do not like him. He's a nondescript, short, balding man with a terrible mustache. Just not a good dude. You can sense it straight up. Like, you shouldn't be around kids, fella.
No, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So this guy that should be on a watch list, or maybe, I don't know, is running this orphanage. So you're like, oh, this is not ideal. And then we're very quickly introduced to Anya, who I immediately fell in love with the very first time I saw her. The character, she is a cute as pie little thing. So I love her cute. I don't know if you call them like hair horns. Yeah. I don't know what you call them. But
adorable.
I'm all for it. She's super cute. And it also is alleged in this moment that she's super intelligent. But we don't know the context of that.
Yes.
But we're also getting some internal monologuing from the creepy watch list orphanage guy.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's saying, please take this girl away. She's weird and creepy. Weird. And you're just like, excuse me, mister. Like, I beg your pardon? Yeah. So we're introduced to Anya here. What was your first thoughts when you see this cute little pink-haired girl?
I wrote a note. I wrote some notes. The only note I wrote for Anya is perfect. I love her. I would die for her. She's adorable, and I won't spoil yet, but I just love her.
She's great. She leaves such a memorable first impression because, absolutely. Yeah, she's cute as hell. Really sweet. Whether it be the Japanese or the English dialogue you're getting here, it's just so perfectly young, cute, childly, childlike in the delivery. Like, I'm all for it. I'm in this world. I want to save Anya. I want to run to this orphanage and take her away from this creeper. But yeah, she's adorable. And then there's another eyebrow raise moment here where, like, Lloyd's like, I'll take her. Like, almost like it's a new car off the lot. And creepy orphanage guy's like, yeah, that's fine. No paperwork needed. Just take her home. And you're like, what?
Yeah. That's a little questionable. Just a little. The second you meet her, and like, you know, obviously that he's going to take her. My first thought was, oh, he's doomed. You cannot resist her. Yeah. She is so charming and so precious. And the more you get to know about her, the more you love her.
Yeah, she is such a little sweetheart. Like, my heart was bleeding for this girl. And, like, when he's walking through the hallway of the orphanage, like, it is a very emotional moment because there's all these poor little kids just pleading with their eyes, looking at Lloyd, like, please take me, mister. Please take me away from this place.
This horrible man.
Yeah, like, get me out of this rundown, decrepit building that's, a horror show here waiting to happen. But anyway, Anya is selected by Lloyd and, yeah, just takes her home. And in this moment too, we start to pick up on the fact that Anya is a telepath.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some quick referencing here from the narrator, adding some more context to this very fast where, Anya is also known as Test Subject 007. So shout out for the James Bond reference there, tying further into the spy world.
More spy, yeah.
We don't really get any explanation as far as how she came to be or where she came from. They said, you know, she was experimented on as a child by some organization, nameless at the time. People are nameless and faceless. We don't really know her exact age too, because there's a moment before he decides on Anya where he's like, oh, the kid needs to be 6 years old to go to Eden College. He's like, I'm six, but like she's a tiny little thing. She's
standing on her tippy toes.
Yeah. It's so cute. It's so cute. And we also see where he needs someone smart in parentheses to go to Eden College. And so she picks up the crossword and just like Rain Mans this thing, just all the way through it. And he's like, wow, like this kid's a young visionary, like smart, funny, cute, intelligent, all these things. Like, yeah, she's the one. But little do we know, she was just playing the game with her telepathic abilities.
Yup. Oh, so that's what I was going to say earlier about Anya is the kind of trope of young girl imbued with power that she does not want or does not know how to harness. Obviously, as a Buffy fan, that hits me right in the heart. So the second you meet her and you find out that she has this backstory, oh my God, I was immediately in. I was just like, you better protect her, Twilight.
Yeah, you need to die for this girl.
Yeah.
No excuses. We all should. Yeah,
she's perfect.
Yeah, she is the best. I love her.
And she loves peanuts.
Yes, she does love. And bacon.
And bacon, yes.
Yeah.
So cute.
A girl after everybody's heart, that's for sure. So anyway, takes her home. They return to the Forger residence. Anya plonks herself down in front of the TV and Spy Wars is on as she turns on. She's like, whoa, I love this. It's so cool. So he's like, yep, you can sit down and watch that. And he's like, I got to go run some errands. He's like, no, I want to go on an adventure with you too, Papa.
Yeah.
Because at first he's like, I want you to call me Father. And so she's like, no, Papa. It's Papa, which is cute. Even more adoring. So they're walking around the street and that's where she's like, yeah, I want a pistol with a silencer. And I think like in his like straight-laced spy mindset, he's like, you know, if you behave, we'll see if we can get you one.
Yeah, if we can find one on sale, then you'll get one.
Which just cracked me up.
Yeah, good parenting.
In this back and forth where what's happening here, we find out, she loves peanuts. She loves bacon. Yes. Where she cutely attempts to say bakery and, my heart explodes again in this moment.
Ugh.
But we're also starting to see Anya freak out a little bit here because she's chiming into Lloyd's thoughts and he's worried about potential attacks and where people could come from to take him down or Anya and all these things. So she's starting to freak out a little bit there. As far as she's, I guess, a negative impact to this situation.
Yeah.
And there's a line here where she's like, I promise I'm a good bargain. Again, like, I add value to your life, Papa. Like, please see the value. I love you. Like, I'm fine. Don't take me home. Like, it's just, this kid is the cutest little thing you'll ever did see just about.
Truly. Cutest anime kid, I think, ever.
Yeah, I think so. Because a lot of anime kids are just annoying.
Yeah.
And you can't really connect or like care about them at all more than the bare minimum. Where with this girl, like you said, like, I'd die for this kid straight off the rip. I'm like, I'm fighting for her with every last breath.
She's so precious.
Super, super precious. So, they're wandering around doing the shop. And then Anya gets a little bit tired, gets a little bit exhausted. So then Lloyd's like picked her up and she's asleep on his shoulder and he's carrying the groceries home. But then he's starting to realize, you know, this isn't as easy as I thought it is. Like, I'm having a hard time understanding this kid. So being the good, diligent studier that he is, goes to the library and brings home every single parenting book ever read, or ever written, And so then he's studying these, studying up on these books as Anya's asleep. And there's a really cold moment again. Like you mentioned how sort of cold-blooded and ruthless Twilight can be. And as he's reading these books, he's having this thought where he's like, as soon as the mission is over, it's back to the orphanage for her. And you're like, you motherfucker.
You know, it's not, there's no chance that he's going to be able to let her go. But in that moment, you're still like, you piece of shit.
Yeah, I was very upset. I was seeing red in this moment because I'm like, this little kid is the cutest little thing you ever did see, Lloyd. And just because you are so emotionally closed off and broken inside, she is just a device or a means to an end to finish this mission. Yep. And then, yeah, you're going to throw her back to this orphanage with that creepy watch list guy that we talked about earlier. Like, come on, man. Not cruel. Good. Very, very cruel. And so we jump forward to the next day and Lloyd is heading out on another mission and he's like, no, you're staying home this time, Anya. It's not happening. And then they have this really cute game of like where she's trying to tail him without him discovering her. And there's like this really quick montage of scenes where he's like, I found you. I see you. And she's she's in the air vent, hide behind a tree. Ugh. And she's in disguise over there. And there's like 10 different scenarios that play out in like 10 seconds. And I was racking up the entire time.
She's like, oh, Papa's so good at hide and seek. He's a spy, yeah.
I guess that's a good way of just conveying, like, yes, she is a child. Like, she understands, she's realized that her dad's a spy, and there's some real stakes attached to that. But then in these moments, you can see where she is, you know, let's just, she's 6 years old with an asterisk because we don't really know. No. Like, she's small for her age. She could just be a small six-year-old. She could be four. She could be five. Who knows? But, like, she's a young little kiddo. She doesn't understand everything that's at play here.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. Papa's good at hide and seek. So cute. So goddamn cute. And so he ends up being able to get away from this game of hide and seek by barricading her inside, puts like a giant skip bin in front of the door and ties it up.
Ties it up. Yeah. Just very safe. Totally very normal safe thing to do for a child.
Yep. So I guess he's comfortably knowing she's not going to get out, but no one else is going to get in. So maybe there's some assurance there. And then we're introduced to Frankie, who's, you could say, like Twilight's handler or info or leg man when it comes to the spy game here. And he slings Twilight or Lloyd some intel on the school, the test. So all the test questions and answers that Anya needs to memorize to be able to get into Eden College. And we also see in this scene play out where Anya's got four different names in her file, and we find out that she's been adopted and returned four times by three different orphanages. And again, my heart just breaks.
What is wrong with people? That part was rough to hear. And that I think it also a little bit kind of gets to Twilight. You know, he kind of realizes, oh, maybe she's, you know, she's a little weird, and that, you know, his feelings that she was a little weird, a little almost annoying, are somewhat validated in that. But also, I feel like he doesn't understand why.
Yeah.
At least maybe I'm projecting. I don't understand why, because she's perfect.
She is perfect. And I think maybe he doesn't understand why from just a complete lack of emotional, emotional acceptance on his side. Like, he is just so cold and emotionless all the time, unless it's in black and white and it's right and wrong answers. I guess he can't understand. He's just like, she's just broken. She's not a good kid. Yeah. That must be the reason. But you can see, I guess, the cracks start to present themselves here with Lloyd, where he is trying to understand Anya more, why she is who she is, what's happened. And that sort of file that Frankie gave him, I guess, starts to put him on the right path as far as, she is a human. Like, she's a real person. She's not just a tool to be used in a mission to save the world or prevent badness happening.
I think he even says it at one point, is that she's, you know, he wants to bring about world peace. He wants to save the world because of kids like her, because of people like her.
That moment is a very endearing scene that plays out. And again, like, there's so many moments in this episode and also in subsequent episodes where it can just jump from a silly, whimsical, crazy, zany situation to something that then just punches you right in the heart in a good or a bad way. Like, it makes you feel things. And love me some Spy Family. Love me some Anya. Love me some Lloyd too. Like, I understand this man more and more the more we watch this episode than future ones. So
definitely.
Yeah, so we get that context as far as, four families, three different orphanages. My heart can't take much more of this at this point of the episode. I'm like, someone just love this child, please.
Yeah, seriously.
So we flash to back home. Anya is bored out of her mind and Lloyd's just doing boring psychiatrist-based things, I guess, in his guise that he's currently under at this point in time. But she is starting to hear Lloyd's thoughts and he's like, oh, shit, I got to hide my spy equipment. You know, it's not safe to have all this stuff around a kid. But he doesn't know that, yeah, she can read his thoughts at the moment. So she's like, her ears prick up or her mind pricks up or she pricks up in general. She's like, ooh, dad, like Papa's got all these toys.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, he thinks of the code to get into all these toys then and there as well. And, you know, it's much like, gotcha, daddy. I can play with all these things.
Love it.
And it's just another very relatable child moment. Like I remember getting into anything and everything I could as a kiddo. So I'm like, yeah, I'm right there. I would have done the exact same thing.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. Every single year I checked my mom's closet for Christmas presents. That's what kids do. Little snoopers.
Yeah, yeah. Little snoop. Sometimes you find things you wish you didn't find, but occasionally you find, yeah, future gifts for yourself or cool things that you can play around with while nobody knows. Yeah, sadly, my mom or dad didn't have any spy gear.
Yeah, same.
Had some things I probably don't want to talk about on this episode.
Also but, same.
Imagine what you will, listeners and viewers. Mm. But we then get this crazy contrast of like Spider compared with young child here where Anya's excited and she's about to start playing with all the equipment, but she's singing a song about bombs.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, so oh my God, bless you. She's like, bomby bombs, la la la. Like, it's just like,
yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. So again, like she thinks being a spy is cool, but doesn't realize
the gravity,
the context, and the gravity of it. Yeah. So that again cracked me up. Yeah, and she manages to track down Lloyd's box of spy based paraphernalia. Starts playing around with things and finds like his little, what would you call it? Like a little communications device.
Yeah, a little, yeah, communication radio.
Yeah, and she's just aimlessly like hitting buttons on it, having a great time. Like, oh, I'm a spy. My name's Anya. Da 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 da. And lo and behold, she didn't know she actually sends a message out into the broader criminal underworld, and it gets intercepted by some baddies. And the message that she somehow sends out, where she's like, "Catch me if you can." Yeah. I don't know how, but
who knows? She,
like Morse coded that out to the world.
I like to think that it was pre-installed and there's just a button.
Yeah.
He's just very cocky and he's like, all right, catch me if you can, fucker.
Yeah, which made me cackle again because, yeah, she's just this kid playing spies.
Yeah.
And, yeah, completely unaware of what she has just sort of thrown out into the world. So that happens. And there is a moment here, though, where she's playing with the stuff and she has sort of a bit of a freak out moment for a hot minute and has a bit of a reflective situation play out where she thinks of when she was a young child and where all she wanted to do was play. They're like, no, playtime's over. You don't play with toys anymore. You've just got to train and do these tests because we're doing this. And another consistent messaging here, we're doing it for world peace.
Yep.
So everyone allegedly wants world peace. Yes. Who actually does? We don't know. But
I think just Twilight.
I think so. He's about the only believable one. Because, yeah, these are – I've seen enough cinema, video games, television shows, anime to know that if there's like a laboratory with people in white sort of medical garb running tests on kids, it's rarely for a good reason.
Yeah, no, it's very, very rarely a good reason.
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, I can't trust you. Like, I think we see three doctors or whatever in this moment. Nameless again. We don't understand where they are, who they are, but they're just doing experiments on kids for world peace in air quotes. Yeah. So it's like, okay. So we can see a little bit of Anya's past explained in this situation here. Lloyd returns home. And he can see with his fantastic spy perception that the skip bin has been slightly moved and tweaked here, but he just casually walks into the home without acting like he knows something's on, because we find out very quickly there's a couple of heavy hitters laying in wait ready to take him down. But he dispatches of them very, very quickly and very, very easily, and then realizes that Anya was kidnapped. Dun, dun, dun. So it's a moment where, yeah, the stakes are getting raised, but also we also then see furthermore with Lloyd how goddamn cold he is, because he's starting to think out this situation and the best way to play it out, as far as, okay, my fake daughter's just been kidnapped. I need to work out where she's gone, what the stakes are, where the risk and reward is. But then he has this other train of thought where she's like, oh, well, she's gone. I guess we just start over.
Just get
like,
a new one.
Yeah.
Just go back to that creepy guy and pick up a new one.
And it's another got plenty. We're just like, God damn it, Lloyd. Like, I was liking you and I was in your corner. And right now I want to slap you in the face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That moment is brutal. That's, again, yeah, just cold hearted. Just the autopilot spy thought of like, okay, just write it off. Start again.
Yeah. So there's a part where you're like, is he actually just going to do that? Like, is he just going to be like, yeah, cool, I'm just going to go pick up another kid. Like, it's almost like a six pack in a fridge. Just going to crack another one off and keep going. But we don't have to wait too long to see what plays out in this situation. But yeah, we then jump ahead and we see that Anya is tied up and in a shopping cart for some reason. She's in front of the guy that Twilight wronged at the very beginning of the episode, Edgar, the guy that he double-crossed regarding the whole toupee conspiracy, which... it's still insane to talk about out loud.
What a place to start.
Yeah, toupees and the risk of world peace surrounding fake hair. Like, I guess, you know, no one wants to be surrounded by fake people, so I get it. Like,
that's fair. Yeah, I can think of a certain world leader or former world leader that had terrible hair and possibly a toupee, and nobody trusts him. So
yeah, well, guilty 34 times today, so we'll see what plays out.
Not naming any names, of course.
Yeah. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a Twilight to come in and take care of that situation. If you
yes, please.
Drift. So there's the tonal shift here is very, very noticeable straight away. Like, gone is the fun, cutesy, la 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 scenario where Anya was playing spies. Now she's in the world of spies and espionage and bad dudes. And yeah, we get some more context on the toupee thing for some reason. And one of Edgar's goons is like, hey, maybe we just ditch the toupee idea. And he goes, you know what? This is what I think you, silence pistol, which was referenced earlier in the episode, boom, kills this guy straight away. And you're like, oh, okay. So they're not shying away from death. Nope. So you can see the maturity level of this anime has just gone from, you know, Teletubbies to goddamn... Breaking Bad or something instantly.
Yeah, killing your henchman in front of a child is certainly next level.
Yeah. So I really appreciated and respected that shift in tone. Like, I hadn't read the manga at the time. I'm up to date on the manga now, but I just thought it was just going to be fun, happy-go-lucky through its entirety. But no. Like, there is death. There is heartache. There is some really... delicate and uncomfortable situations that play out in this world, and I'm all for it because it adds to this world so much more than just surface level fun stuff.
Yeah, because even with the concept of, you know, all of the war going on, everything, it's almost ambiguous how that affects the people in their day-to-day lives, and you don't really get a sense for the actual terror involved. And in that moment, it's like, oh, okay, yes, yep, this is for real. We're killing people out here.
Yeah. It goes way beyond the get smart, just comedic, slapsticky.
Yeah, we're over toupees.
Yeah. So even though, this is all over toupees, there is some death and some real violent acts at stake taking place right in front of our eyes and right in front of this poor little child's eyes.
So, but she does get to see... the pistol with the silencer.
That's true.
She does note.
Yeah. So I guess there is a bucket list item sort of checked off in that moment where she sees a silenced pistol used in the real world, albeit to kill someone instantly. But yeah, we don't really sort of dwell on this scene too heavily because we hear a car screech out the front of this enemy establishment here, and we find out that the goons have returned from the Forger apartment because the last time we saw Lloyd, he was having a moment thinking about what to do as far as, I'll just get another kid. And it ended with a crowbar shot coming down on his head. So we're back at the evil villain's lair. Twilight's been captured and restrained, got a bag over his head, and they take him upstairs to Edgar and the other cronies and throw him on the ground. And what's going to happen? Like, maybe Twilight isn't all he's cracked up to be. Maybe this was all just smoke and mirrors as far as how great a spy and a hero in parentheses he is, but nah. Swerve again, the man of 100 faces, actually did the crisscross and swapped his face or put a mask on one of the goons and was sort of standing in the background after he threw Lloyd down in parentheses because it's not him, but it's the goon just hiding in there with the Lloyd Forger suit on, grabs Anya and does the runner, trying to flee with his daughter in tow. So I'm like, yes, some reprieve. You're back in my good books, Lloyd. Yeah, I respect you. I'm feeling good again.
Yeah, that is fucking adorable. Because as he's taking her out, he's saying, I'm not going to hurt you. It's okay. I'm not going to hurt you. It's showing that he genuinely does give a shit about her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I needed to see.
Yeah, that's it. Because in his mind, he doesn't know that Anya's a telepath. So even though she can hear his thoughts and knows that it's Papa, in his mind, he just thinks it's a random bad dude that's taken her and running again. So she's stuck with just more bad people continually in, I guess, her whole life so far up until this point.
Pretty much.
So it's nice to see him reassure her, even though he's in the bad guy disguise. And in this moment too, we get a little bit more context and backstory with Twilight. We work out why he was so anti-children, because he starts telling us about how horrible his upbringing was and that no one was there for him. He was always alone. So you're like, okay, I understand you a little bit more in this moment, Lloyd, but you do want to try and redeem yourself here. It shows that you don't want to be alone, that you do care. Mm-hmm. You do have a beating heart in this tough, hardened spy-like exterior.
Yeah, and I think also probably, you know, he's starting to pick up on the fact that, he and Anya maybe aren't that different, you know, at least in terms of, you know, feeling let down, feeling isolated, not feeling like anyone's there for you, anyone's in your corner. And
it's a perfect observation, yeah.
Yeah, and I you know, I think there's the potential for that to grow more, you know, as he learns more about her. Because I think there are a lot of parallels between them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though they come from two different worlds, they've lived two very similar lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perfect observation there. But it's also great that they are building out this world so heavily in this first episode. Mm-hmm. Like, it's tough to give us a ton of depth in 20-odd minutes, but I feel... Yeah. What Wit do and what Furuhashi, the director behind this anime, does is they just give us this living, breathing world. They explain the stakes. They don't introduce us to a ton of characters. It's crazy because we don't even meet Yor, who's one of the three leads.
Yeah, that's why I had to watch the second episode.
Yeah, because she's the best. I love Yor Forger so much.
Yeah,
but we don't even meet her in episode one.
Nope.
Minor spoilers, but the character we do meet, and they take some time to explain how these characters came to be in just these little fleeting flashbacks with Lloyd and Anya. And it just really makes you care about these characters in such short order. So it's a hat tip to everyone involved, because they throw a lot at us, but in a way that's digestible and a way that just makes us care, or made me care at least.
Definitely. It's very well crafted. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have this situation. They run out of the bad guy's hideout. And he sort of puts her down, puts her in front of him, starts writing a little note in this part, and gives this note to Anya. And he's like, all right, if you run to the end of the street and turn right and just follow that road a little bit more, you go to the nearest police station. If you give him this note, it'll keep you free from danger and also allow you to get into a good orphanage. You're like, God damn, he's letting her go. But like in this moment too, I got it in a way, because he's like, you know what? This isn't a world for a child. This isn't
safe,
a place.
Yeah.
Where this kid should be around. So he's doing what he thinks is best for her in this moment.
Exactly.
So I'm like, okay, this is sweet. I endorse this, Lloyd, because it's coming from a good place.
Yeah, he could have easily just been like, go away.
Yeah.
You know, not tell her where to go, not giving her a note. He could have just gone, bye. But he clearly already cares for her.
Yeah, and in his very cool, calm, collected and calculated mind, he's thought several steps ahead, worked out, the nice orphanage. Don't know what the note says, but I'm sure it's got some very critical information there that will allow the police to help Anya and get her to where she needs to be. And so the last we see here of Anya is she's running up the street towards the police station. So you're like, oh no, like, is this family over already? Like, no,
heartbreaking.
Come back. And so then Twilight ends up sneaking back into the villain's hideout and sets a fantastic little trap, because
I love the trap.
It's badass.
It's like, so smart.
And it's impressive. He managed to put this trap together in the span of, it feels like 20 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Immediate.
Yeah. So again, even though there was that doubt that crept in for a hot second where you're like, oh man, he's been captured that easily and it was all just a ruse.
Oh,
then
yeah.
You see him now build a trap throughout the bottom ground floor of this, you know, burnt out warehouse that manages to take down about a half a dozen baddies here.
Brilliant.
In very short order again. Like, he's a dude. Like, he's moving around in the shadows. He's kicking these guys' asses. He's whatever's in these bags that he had on the in the ceiling that were triggered when they busted through the door. That
I think it was flour.
It was flour?
Yeah, flour is flammable. So I think, I'm pretty sure, because they were like, oh, don't light it, don't fire.
That's great. Because I was just about to ask him, like, do you know what it was? Because, yeah, they mentioned, yeah, don't shoot your gun. You know, it'll go up. And I'm like, what is that? What element? Well, what's in a sack like that that does that?
So just, flour. That's what, why I think it's so brilliant, because it's very likely, because I think it's a storefront, isn't it?
I think so.
So probably just what was there. He probably can just whip up traps with whatever he has around him.
Yeah, he's like MacGyver.
Yes. Yeah. 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 There's definitely some MacGyver elements there.
German MacGyver. There you go. Or Estonian MacGyver, I should say. So, yeah, he sets this trap, takes out all of Edgar's henchmen, leaving only Edgar available, and then he manages to sort of stealth around behind him, and he's got his pistol trained at the back of Edgar's head, sort of saying, hey, you got to leave me alone, otherwise your daughter Karen is going to be in a world of hurt here. He knows all about her. He knows even down to where every single mole is on her body. And I'm like, oh, Mamma Mia, Twilight.
Yeah, that's another line where I was like, oh, damn, okay. He really is a fucking spy. Cold as hell.
Yeah.
He went deep undercover.
Yeah, deep indeed, like many inches deep, I'd say. So, yeah, shout out to Twilight. But, yeah, so he starts threatening Edgar with this where, yeah, if you don't stop this right now, if you don't forget I ever existed and stop this chase, Karen's in some big trouble here. And in that moment, Edgar throws his gun to the ground and admits defeat. So I guess he's accepted these terms from Twilight. And then we see Twilight exit the storefront. Yeah, that makes sense because he does mention that he's doing some shopping in the city.
That's right, yes.
Good pickup there. So he leaves the storefront. Walking out, and it's funny because he's sort of walking out and he's lost in his own thoughts, but I don't know, like the body language, he looks like a little dejected. Yep. I think maybe off the back of telling Anya to go, because you can see even though he's just kicked all these guys' asses and saved, I wouldn't say saved the world, but, you know, saved the day.
Made progress, yeah.
Yeah, you can see that in that moment he is a little dejected. And I'm like, a little body language tell there. I'm like, I like this. This is great animation, great subdued storytelling just by how he's positioned in these scenes. And so he's beginning to walk home. But then he realizes he sees little Anya has been waiting there for him the entire time. And you can see this really throws him for a loop because he's struggling to remember what he said, what character he's in, because he's like, you know, what are you still doing here? But then he's like, oh shit, I would know because I was not Lloyd at the time. I was the bad guy. So he's jumping between personas really quickly, trying to make up a story. And that was where he was like, oh, yeah, I came down here to do some shopping in the area, but the place is closed down. Oh, silly me. But it's a really cute, human, real moment where you can see Lloyd does have a heart again and he cares about this little kid. And, yeah, this moment made me smile pretty big again.
Yeah, it's real sweet. It just the fact that she sits there waiting for him. And I feel like, you know, like you say, he's a little dejected probably because he's dismissed her. And then I feel like you see an instant of relief flash over his face. And then immediately the panic of, okay, back into spy mode. What did I tell her? What's the lie? Just, you can tell it's just the cracks are forming. He cannot resist.
And it's good too because no one likes a perfect character, or at least I don't. Like if no one has flaws, you can't really relate. You can't really empathize with them or have that. Like for me especially, I can't be invested in a character if they're just perfect in every aspect of life.
No room for growth.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want that growth. So seeing Lloyd, where at the start of the episode they talk about how great he is and how he is like, you know, the best thing on earth just about to then seeing him bumbling in this scenario with this cute little kid in front of him. Yeah. I like how much of a difference that is and how much of a positive whiplash it is from those openings.
Yeah, great contrast. Yeah, I love it.
So, yeah, she runs over to him. Papa, grabs onto his leg in a little childlike cuddle. Beautiful
the
moment.
The one-leg hug. Oh,
so I love cute. Me a one-leg hug in cinema and in anime and in television. But there's this line here, and this one got me teary-eyed because she's cuddling up to him and she's like, if you leave me behind, I'm going to cry. And I'm like, fuck.
Like, me too, girl.
Fuck. I'm crying now.
Yeah.
Oh. Beautiful. Yeah,
tugging at the heartstrings.
Yeah, it really got me well, and it put a nice bow on that whole previous sort of couple of scenes that played out because, yeah, it was action-packed, there was violence, there was cool spy stuff going on, and then having all that now in the rear view, and it was just this cute father-daughter moment, I'm just like, yep,
oh.
I'm in. I was already in, but this like...
That seals it, yeah.
Further sealed the deal for me. Yeah. And so now we jump forward to the exam day at Eden College, and Anya's sitting in the room and looking around the room and like collecting all the thoughts from the other children in the room. And you can see they are all packing it. They're like, yeah. I don't know any of these questions.
I don't know any of this.
It's all so hard. I'm going to fail. And so you think and go, shit, what's going to happen here?
The little girl going, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. That's me. Yeah. When in doubt, pick C. That's like fully.
Yeah, I was always when in doubt, pick B. So
maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Yeah, maybe. But it was relatable thinking of childhood and half-assing my way through so many tests I was most of these kids in this room. And so, yeah, Anya's freaking out because she can't steal any answers from any of these other kids. She looks down at the sheet and, like, her facial expressions throughout this anime and this manga are some of the best out there because they're so exaggerated, like her eyes and her mouth movements and everything like that. It is
so expressive.
Almost to the point of like caricature, but it just works.
Yep.
So we get a few of those here where she's like, oh my God, I'm going to fail this test. Papa's going to send me back to the orphanage type of thing. And we jump forward to later in that day, the tests are over and Lloyd is looking at the pass fail boards and he's trying to find K212. I couldn't see if that was any homage to spy history out there. Couldn't find anything there. But that was Anya's number. And we find out that Anya has passed. And in this moment, another beautiful, cute, real family moment. Twilight picks her up in this moment of joy, as you're seeing, holding her in the sky like so Simba cute. In The Lion King. Yeah. And he's so happy and so overjoyed. But due to being so happy and overjoyed and relaxed in this moment, he just crumbles to the ground because all the exhaustion hits
just
him at once. And he's just a husk on the ground.
I love it.
Again. Then it cuts to the end credits from there.
That was the moment for me that I was like, even if I hadn't already decided I was going to watch the second episode, that did it for me. He's so proud of her and it's so cute and sweet. And then the immediate switch to him passing out because he is so relaxed and happy in that moment.
He's confused too. Like, it's clear that he's never been probably that relaxed or that happy or that joyous in his life because he's like, what's happened to me? What is this?
What is this?
Yeah.
What is this feeling?
Yeah. What is this positive energy flowing through my body right now?
Get it off me.
Yeah. So we cut to the end credits where we get a lot of static images of Estonia, a lot of that, European architecture, a lot of beautifully animated and painted panels that they're showing there. And we get the ending track playing, which is Kageki by Gen Hoshino. Another great,
banger.
Great track. Another banger, another toe tapper. And it just really ends this episode on a positive note. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, we get a little post-credits stinger. And we're back in the apartment. Twilight's so on the couch. Anya thinks he's dead because he's just lying there lifeless.
Just completely flat out.
Yeah, so she's like, oh, Papa's dead. We hear a knock at the door. The postman is there. Anya runs out, greets him, grabs the letter from the postman, runs back in, tries to wake Papa up with the letter, banging him in the face, realizes that he gone.
It's done.
And so then she cuddles into him and like attempts to fall asleep, snuggling into Lloyd's arms. Another heart-exploding moment right
there. Oh, absolutely. So fucking cute.
So goddamn cute. And then... I don't know if it was just the warmth of Anya got the energy back into Lloyd to wake him up, but he snaps out of it, sits straight up, and he's like, I can't believe I fell asleep in front of someone.
What the hell are you doing?
just that spy mentality. Yeah, that spy mentality again, yeah. Where show no weakness, yeah, always be awake, always be alert. Mm-hmm. And we can already see, yeah, the chinks in that armor keep happening.
Yeah. Yep.
Anya is just breaking down that hard exterior.
In very little time.
Yeah.
For a hardened spy, he is cracking immediately.
Yeah. I don't know if that's like a general broader observation on the spy game back in this time period where maybe they weren't all that great.
Maybe.
Or Anya's just that cute. I reckon it's the latter.
I think it's that she's just so precious.
She is so goddamn precious. So, yeah, he sits up, grabs the letter, rips it open, and it's from Eden College. And we find out that the second phase of the application is an interview with both parents. Ooh. Absolutely no exceptions. Dun, dun, dun. End episode right there. And you're like,
ooh. I love that. Ooh, okay. There's no mama.
Yeah. Yes. I forgot about that.
It's so cute. She's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super cute. So, yeah, we already get that seed planted as far as meeting your forger in the second episode. Like, we won't love go into the specifics of that second episode. But, yeah, she is so goddamn great. The Thorn Princess, like,
love her.
She can assassinate me any day of the week and twice on Sundays should she choose.
Whew. Listen, I'm not going to lie. There was a brief moment where I was like, do I have everything I need to throw together a Thorn Princess cosplay, like super low key last minute? I did not.
Next time.
Would have been very fun, especially because she doesn't even appear in the first episode.
Yeah.
Very, very topical.
Very topical. And then it's like, do I dress this or not? Like, do we just assume that's just your casual Friday garb?
Just,
like,
yeah, that's just how I rock.
That's it. That's it.
A new cosplay every day.
Yeah, but your forger, love her.
Love
Anya,
her.
Love her. Lloyd, love him. During that episode, there was moments where I'm like, I don't love you. But at the end of it, I'm like, you know what? I like this crazy family that's forming and I can't wait to see more of it play out in future episodes and future seasons. So we got sort of the high level general impression you got, but what was your favorite scene or moment in episode one that you know, stands out more than others?
Oh man. Do you know, I think it is the scene where he's done with the big boss. He threatens him and leaves and she's waiting for him and he doesn't know she's there. I think that's really my all-time favorite moment in the whole episode, in both episodes, because I've seen the first two now. And it's I think it just speaks to the overall vibe of the show of, you know, this guy's trying to do his job, and his job is to save people, but he doesn't want to get involved in the nitty-gritty. But now he has this kid, can't avoid it. She is the nitty-gritty. And I think it just you know, as you learn more about the two of them, the cracks forming make so much sense. And you can tell, like, pretty much at that moment that, like, there's no hope for him. This little girl has him wrapped around her finger.
Yeah, it's special, this first episode. This first season is very special. Like, I look back through my anime list and I actually rated this first season a 10 out of 10. Like, I'd probably say, like, it's hard to give a 10 because they only allow you to do whole numbers. You can't do halves. Mm. I'd probably say it's a solid 9.5, but it is so fun and so enjoyable. And this first episode, I think, is just a perfect overall embodiment of what the ride is to come.
Oh, definitely.
The characters, the relationship, the bond, seeing that bond build through this episode between Lloyd and Anya is, yeah, just beautiful. And it just warms my heart. And like I said, that whole, if you leave me behind, I'm going to cry line, I think that's a nice, almost like slogan for this anime, this manga as a whole, because yeah, they are a family. They're one unit. Yep. They stick together through thick and thin. And yeah, I want more of it. Like, yeah, and the world wants more of it because, yeah, it is doing gangbusters. The movie performed really well in the cinemas. We've got, two seasons out now, so 37 episodes available for you to consume. So if you've watched the first two episodes, I guess it goes without saying you're going to continue to watch it.
I'm immediately going to go start watching the third after we wrap up.
Yes.
That's my night.
Yes, that sounds like a perfect night to me. A perfect night. But listeners, if you're still on the fence about Spy Family, the most five common comparisons that we see on my anime list as far as if you're like that, you're going to love this. If you like Hinamatsuri, Kaguya-sama, Lover's War, The Yakuza's Guide to Babysitting, or Princess Principal. If you've enjoyed any four of those little ditties, there's a fair chance you're going to like Spy Family. But if you don't like Spy Family, maybe I don't want to know you because Spy Family is freaking great.
What's wrong with you? Yeah. Do you need a hug?
Yeah, all of the hugs. Lloyd needs many hugs too. Mm-hmm. I love him. And Anya. And Thorn Princess.
Yes.
But yeah, out of those four, oh, sorry, I said five before. Out of those four, as far as if you like that, you're going to love this. Kaguya-sama Lover's War is also a must watch. It is an absolute banger.
Mm.
And yeah, a couple of seasons out on that one that you can chew through as well. But yeah, we might jump into the last word, which is presented by our friends over at Japan Crate. Experience Japan through snacks and knickknacks via monthly package drops, courtesy of JapanCrate.com. And while you're there, be sure to use code 8bit15 at checkout. Get yourself 15% off your order and also get free shipping to anywhere on planet Earth, even Estonia, I would imagine. But Kayla, what is your last word or words or thoughts on Spy Family?
Oh boy. No mama.
I'll accept that. That's fantastic.
Listen, I just love Anya and anything she says or does is gold standard.
Yeah, she's one of the best new characters to appear in anime in the last decade plus for me, I would say, because she's just fun. And yeah, she's not an annoying kid like most kids are in anime or in film and games and anything.
Or
most
just in real life. Are,
yeah, anywhere. In the digital or the real world. Yeah, she's a good kid. I'd die for this girl.
She's a good egg.
Yeah, and you're a good egg too. Thank you so much for stopping on by and sharing your day with me and your thoughts on Spy Family. It's been an absolute hoot.
This was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I love talking about anime, and I think this is the first chance I've had to do that in a while, so it feels really good.
We're going to have to do it again soon. Maybe you can find something to introduce me to that we can check out and unpack on here.
That'd be fun. Hmm.
Yes, so... Yeah, obviously you can find us on them socials. You can see what we're up to on the daily. Anything else you wanted to mention before we start to close this down? Like obviously you were talking about you've got the 100 days leading up to Halloween and then the relaunch of And I Must Scream, which I'm very excited about. I'm curious to see what you got cooking there. So what's that? If the maths starts 100 days before Halloween, is that like late June? Is that
It's July.
Okay, it is July. Okay, my maths is... horrible, clearly. Was that? That's pretty close. It's four weeks away.
Yeah, I'm totally prepared for it.
Yeah, yeah. And where can listeners, viewers, and general fans or soon-to-be fans of what you're doing, where can they find you on them socials?
Oh, boy. So I am not going to call it X.
I never call it X. It's
My Twitter handle is at Andraste, A-N-D-R-A-S-T-E. And my TikTok is my name, Kayleigh Lawrence, 69, because I'm an adult.
I've never even noticed the 69 in your TikTok handle before.
No, I made a very bold choice with that one. Hmm.
I respect that you just leant into it. You're like, oh, we're going to have some fun with this. And yeah, viewers, listeners, you can have some fun by following Kayleigh on those socials. You can also have some moderate fun and entertainment enjoyment following me on the socials at More Than Senpai. If you wanted to check out what we're doing as a collective, you can head on over to morethanhentai.life. It is a safe URL to plug into your browser, so feel free to peruse that on your work network. You can join up to the Segoy Squad there from the low, low price of $1 a month to get you exclusive access to perks, giveaway, swag, and more. And you can check out some of the best merchandise in the game over there at morethanhentai.life. Get yourself tees, hats, hoodies, and everything else in between. But yeah, that brings us to the end of another episode of More Than Hentai. Kayleigh, thank you so much for stopping on by.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Very soon. But listeners, whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself, stay hungry, and much love to all the gorgeous waifus out there. Goodbye.